Welcome to Nattering with the Knights, Nord Anglia International School Hong Kong's PE department, talking about sport, physical activity, health, and a host of other topics. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Nattering with the Knights. We are back after a very short absence. I'm joined today by Mr. Adam Ralston. How are you today, Mr. Ralston?
I'm grand. Thank you very much for having me.
So, a little bit of background. Mr. Ralston is actually in the school because he was covering both myself and Mr. Reid. I am obviously okay because I'm here back in school. Mr. Reid, not quite back in school yet, but he's on his way. We're fine. Don't worry about us. We're soldiers. PE department are made of stronger stuff. But Mr. Ralston is going to be joining us till the end of term. And he's getting a chance to really learn from some of the best in the business, I'd imagine. But we've not got him on here to talk about PE teaching. We've got him on here today to talk about the fact that he's got some podcast-worthy stories. In the short time I've met him, I've realised he's got that capacity to share some. Notably, he's got a Guinness World Record. And he actually has a little film documentary that came with it, The Longest Hole, Golfing Across Mongolia. I actually watched it over the weekend and it was thoroughly enjoyable. So it's not a PR pitch for everybody to go and download this, but it is a very interesting story. So we're going to get into that in a little bit more detail. So first of all, welcome to Nord Anglia, Adam.
Thank you very much. No, it's been a good 2 weeks for sure.
A whirlwind, I'd imagine. But yeah, and it's probably only going to get busier. But no, great to have you with us. And yeah, this story really was very interesting to me. And having watched the feature film the weekend, it really cemented it for me. So just giving us a little bit of background, because it's quite an obscure record that you hold. So give us a little bit of background into why golf, why Mongolia, and just a little bit, shed a bit of light on that for us.
Sure. Well, I probably have to pull it back a wee bit further than that, I would say. So I come from a background of I played 4 years of professional rugby. I'm also a fanatical golfer, so I mean they don't really go hand in hand. But when I was finishing playing with Hong Kong Rugby, I was actually on tour in Kenya playing a couple of test matches there, and a good old friend Ron Rutland, who I used to play rugby with in Hong Kong, was doing a cycle journey from Cape Town through to London. And he was cycling to the Rugby World Cup, and it was going to take him 3 years. And he was stopping by Kenya, and he decided to come and do a talk with the lads that were playing for Hong Kong. And I was sort of getting my love for playing rugby professionally was sort of waning, and I needed to think about what I wanted to do afterwards. And he did his sort of inspirational talk about doing these adventures, and I sort of got swept away in the whole, you know, cycling across or doing something. And so he talked about cycling through pretty much every single country in Africa to get to London over a 3 year period. And so I sat down and had a coffee with him, and I had this idea about, you know, using golf as almost like a vehicle for adventure. So sort of stripping golf back to where it sort of used to be, in a way where sort of in the 16th century in Scotland, just hitting a golf ball across sand dunes or whatever, and whether you could possibly take golf and use it as a means to adventure. So maybe hit a golf ball from one side of maybe Ireland or, you know, a country, or the concept of hitting a golf ball as far as you can sort of was in my head, weirdly enough. And I sort of talked to him about it, and he was saying, you know, first thing he said was, well, I can be what if I'm your caddy in this journey? So like this one little thought in my head developed into us keeping in contact and almost like handshaking on this adventure where we would ultimately, you know, find an expansive space to try and break a world record for the longest golf hole ever played.
And was there a record before this?
There was, but it was significantly less than what
okay, because they obviously didn't do it across one of the biggest countries in the world, basically. Yeah.
Sure, and the reason why we chose Mongolia is, I think that may be a question.
On the tip of my tongue, yeah.
So, like, people ask me, like, why Mongolia? Well, Mongolia is terrain-wise, it almost actually looks like a fairway. You know, you hear the steppe that runs from, you know, Eastern Mongolia all the way to Hungary, that sort of where Genghis Khan basically ruled his empire across that. But Mongolia is a very special place in which it doesn't have any privatized land. So the land is not divided up into private plots. And so you can travel across Mongolia without crossing a fence. So for the 80 days that I walked and the 2,011 kilometers I walked, I didn't cross one fence. So if you can imagine trying to walk in Hong Kong or hit a golf ball from across the street, you're gonna have to climb a wall.
Yeah.
You know, and you can imagine, you know, just having this carpet of land that's continuous from one side to the other.
I mean, yeah, I haven't lived in Kazakhstan myself. I can appreciate that concept that you're talking about there. I mean, still Mongolia, I think, is a completely different kettle of fish. And so you've gone from one end of Mongolia to the other, on the basis that you were finishing at the single golf course that Mongolia has outside the capital city of Ulaanbaatar. That was that was when you were piecing together the final logistics, I assume that came.
Yeah, so this was a mega snowball effect from this little idea that we obviously had in Kenya. And we started whispering it around to a few golf manufacturers, and then DHL actually got on board. So we had a few sponsors sort of show interest, and I flew to South Africa to meet Ron a month later, and we sat down and we worked out, you know, how we're actually going to achieve this. If it's Mongolia, where are we going to finish and where are we going to start? And so the starting point actually was the finishing point. So like you say, we found the only golf course in Mongolia, which is called Mount Bakht Golf Club. And we, in April 2017, we flew to Mongolia and we met the guys there and we said, look, do you mind if we use your 18th hole as our finishing point? And they were like, yeah, for sure, no problem. And so what we did was we worked out the furthest point we could possibly go in Mongolia from that point, which just happened to be at the cross-section of where China, Russia, and Mongolia meet, in the far left corner, so the far west in the Altai Mountains, at the base camp of Mongolia's highest mountain called Curtain Peak. So it was quite a fitting place to start, like on a glacier, looking out over sort of those three countries.
I'm laughing because I obviously watched the film at the weekend and the start was a bit of a disaster. Obviously visually it looked amazing. And then you've hit the tee shot, and I was like, all right, he can play. That's a good shot. And then you probably hadn't maybe thought the finer details of where am I going to find the ball, because obviously you're not hitting it onto a lush fairway. You were hitting it into, like, the shrubbery. Even though it was a good shot, there was nowhere to really land it that was going to be obvious. So the question, actually, Miss Jones had was, why did you use a white ball? Why did you not use something a bit more obvious to find?
Yeah, that's actually quite funny. We were lucky enough to get a sponsorship from TaylorMade, and they stamped our balls with, you know, our logo and things like that. But they actually don't make yellow balls. So, like, the sponsor that we had was probably, if we had gone with someone else that had more of a colourful ball, it would have been better. But just to put it into context, the finishing point was Ulaanbaatar, which is the capital. And we would fly five and a half hours west to a place called Bayan Ulgi, which is up in the most western point of Mongolia. And then from there, in the film, you see us, you know, driving 5 hours in a Russian jeep and then having to take camels and horses up to the point where we wanted to actually tee up from. So we're in like minus degrees now, sort of on this glacier, about to tee up. So we put the tee pegs in the ground, and Ron and I have obviously plotted this route all the way from this point all the way back to the golf club. Like, every single river and every single mountain has been plotted using guides and local knowledge in Mongolia. So this is really not, like you say, it looked like we hadn't planned it, but you can't plan for everything. That's the thing. So we had planned so much in advance, but standing on that tee box, the mass of uncertainty was much greater than the certainty that we had planned for.
Okay. No, and obviously one thing we haven't really talked about, and I say I know having spoken to you earlier today about your own golfing capabilities, like what are they? Obviously this is not something I assume you would do if you were just a keen weekend warrior golfer. I obviously appreciate you're not a professional, but what's your standard? Like, what's your maybe your handicap, etc.?
Yeah, I'm a pretty good golfer, I would say. So like I play off scratch. So people don't really know what that means. It's you would play to par on a golf course. So if the par was a 70, you'd play in 70 shots. That's sort of your level of play. So I would consider myself a pretty good golfer, and absolutely, you need to be a good golfer in Mongolia. I know it sounds odd where, you know, you assume Mongolia is full of, like, you know, fairway-like rolling hills. I can tell you. You can tell me, too.
From
you
even
agree.
The short feature I saw, that's not the case.
Yeah, so beginning our trip in the most, you know, western point of Mongolia, we're in minus degrees, we're in marshlands, we're crossing rivers, it's rocky, it's bitterly cold and wet and horrible. And then contrasting that to playing golf through the Gobi Desert. So you have a whole host of different terrains to actually be playing golf in. So you actually have to be pretty good, I'd have to say.
Okay. And in terms of like the change for yourself, obviously you said 4 years pro rugby. And was that in the sevens setup or was that 15 setup?
Sevens and 15s.
And so how did that shift feel for you to go from basically being a pro rugby player, would I imagine you've got a daily commitment to training and living that kind of lifestyle, to kind of almost going out to an area of Central Asia and living, probably I'd imagine a very, well, as you outlined in the film, a very minimalistic lifestyle where you've basically got a couple of golf clubs and you're living off kind of the goodwill of the local people and the resources you have around you. How is that contrast for you?
Well, I think looking at, like, I don't feel that I achieved what I wanted to achieve in my rugby career, so I felt that there was like a bit of a void there in a way. And I think subconsciously this was a journey that I felt that I wanted to just go out and like achieve it for myself. There was no coaches in the way, there was no excuses. It was like me and Ron and something that had never really been done before. And it was something that, like, it taught me to be patient, like way more patient than I've ever been in my life. You know, like we're covering quite a lot of ground every day, 30 kilometers every day, which is a considerable amount over 80 days.
Never mind hitting a ball as well, yeah.
Exactly. And so when you're looking down the barrel of doing something like 70 days of the same thing, and you say you're 10 days in, the thought of that going through your head is quite attritional. You know, you've got to think, as soon as you start thinking like that far ahead, it's an unobtainable goal. So we're getting into like the sort of mindset, an athlete's mindset or something like that. This is perfect. It is, all you're doing is thinking about the day tomorrow, chipping away at that. Do you think about a week or 2 weeks, or when is this Gobi Desert going to end in 6 weeks? You're never going to get there. That's my thought behind it. So the change of mindset from being an athlete to another weird athlete, probably strange athlete, is the fact that I was in control of my destiny, I think, a lot more than when I was playing rugby.
Okay. So without giving away too much of the story, because obviously I'd like some of our listeners to maybe go and investigate it themselves, but can you share your experience of one of the key characters in the film, which was UB, the dog? Share a little bit of light on your
sure.
relationship with UB.
So when we started the golfing adventure, we were in the Altai Mountains, where all the eagle hunters are in Mongolia, and it's pretty gnarly, and you're very, very isolated. You know, you've only got certain clusters of communities sort of spaced out, say, 100 kilometers at a time.
Right.
So you are in deepest, darkest isolation, actually. We didn't get signal for the first 10 days, so I sort of came out of this tunnel of nothingness. You know, you're in these, it's called the White River Valley. But day three, we stumbled across this wild dog that was just walking by itself, and it's sort of a big black wolf, not unhealthy or anything like that, but you do get these dogs, and I've been to, say, Tajikistan and these other areas of Central Asia, and you do get these wandering hounds or whatever. You know, in Kazakhstan, I'm sure you see them everywhere. But this dog followed us for probably like 70 kilometers. So he would follow us for 25 kilometers of a day. We would set up camp. He would sleep like 20 meters away, just like watching us. Like, I didn't feed him for the first 2 days. And then, you know, I'm like, well, if he's following us, he might as well join us. Do you know what I mean? And then the filmmaker, Andrew King, who's one of my close mates, he was there for the first 10 days, middle 10 days, and the last 10 days filming with the thought of us making a documentary, sort of turned to me and was like, I bet you this dog's going to finish it. If you feed it now, like, he'll finish it. And I was like, geez, like, I don't know what to do with him. So we were trying to put him into cars that were coming by, like, trying to get rid of him. And then it just got to the point where it was like day three, day four. He had gone literally like 100 kilometers with us. And I was like, you know, whatever. Yeah. You just have to feed him now and see what. And we named him. And once you name something,
yeah,
it's very difficult to get rid of him. And so our relationship with this dog really sort of grew. He started actually having characteristics where he started defending our cart with all our food and everything in it. And sort of got to the point where we could leave the cart anywhere. He would just sleep underneath it.
Our dog culture, yeah.
He actually took off a few calves while we were in Mongolia as well. So, like, locals would come up and poke around at the cart, and UB would, like, tell them they, you know, they weren't welcome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was great because a lot of people talk about the, well, I actually didn't like dogs before. I had a bit of a couple of scares with dogs. I'm a massive animal person, but in terms of like domestic dogs, I wasn't like massively keen. And I was told about these sort of big mastiffs, and you know, these, you go into these villages where you get these huge dogs just running
on the chains,
the chains, everything, yeah. But had none of that because of this dog. Literally, the dog would just walk along the side of the cart. Dogs would come in from 200-300 meters away from the village, and they would just like literally hit 50 meters away and just not even come near us because we had this big black wolf with us. So that was good. But Ron, my partner in crime, who was my caddy in this, didn't see the value in having a dog like that. He saw it as a complete burden on supplies. Remember, I'm the one hitting the golf ball.
So he's carrying everything. Yeah,
exactly. So we had like a sort of homemade rickshaw with about 80 to 100 kilos worth of equipment inside. So we had our anything from tents to food to supplies to medical equipment to all our tech that was helping us score and recharge things. So you can imagine we now have another person involved that needs to be fed and watered, and he wasn't too fond of that throughout the trip, which was probably a small issue between me and Ron. The smallest of issues,
yeah. I'd say. Well, no, it's quite cleverly portrayed in the film. And I say I won't go too much more into UB the dog, but he is as key a character, I would say, as both you and Ron in the feature. Okay, and then in terms of taking like a kind of maybe a step away, it was 4 years ago for you. What was the big highlight of the excursion? So not necessarily in the excursion, maybe afterwards, what are you taking away as your biggest highlight and the thing that you have taken away from it the most?
I think it's the satisfaction of completing something that was actually incredibly difficult. It's one of those things where people hear it like, oh, you've golfed across Mongolia. Well, watch the film and see it, and it was tough. Like, you're taking an idea that's never really been done before, and yeah, it's the achievement of finishing something on the day that we plan to achieve it and breaking it down into these little chunks. And I think it goes back to maybe not finishing things, maybe the way that I wanted to finish things, like in other aspects of my life. And it was just a real nice, like, full stop, satisfactory full stop to it. But yeah, I would say there's I'd say that's certainly something. And I know there probably would have been doubters and people that would have thought we were stupid for what we did. So that was very satisfying that we were able to just like go out and achieve what we wanted to achieve.
Okay, no, I like that. And so obviously, like I said, 4 years ago, your movie making or filmmaking career maybe somewhat shifted. Now that you're obviously mastering the art of PE with some of the best in the business here at Northern Anglia. But have you got plans in that area still moving forward? Obviously, I assume you've got a focus now to maybe look into your teaching career. But is there also one eye on that filmmaking business still, or is that something that's taken a bit more of a back seat?
Sure. I actually produced a second film. So Ron actually asked me whether I wanted to cycle from London to Tokyo. And I told him to boil his head, basically. So that was through 27 countries, and it was sponsored by DHL again. But in this case, it was delivering the Rugby World Cup whistle from Twickenham, which was the 2015 Rugby World Cup, to 2019, which was Tokyo. And so he actually recruited a friend of mine, an old friend of mine, and they set off in January 2019. It took them 8 months. And myself and Andrew King, I had no filmmaking background before The Longest Haul. So we self-funded The Longest Haul with a group of us, four of us. And Andrew King and I basically won the funding from DHL to make this second edition or a second film, you know. And so I spent the better part of 2019 filming across the world with Andrew in these incredible places. It's very big contrast to where we are now. But I also did my PGCE through this time. So it was...
I see. Okay.
So PGCE is your teaching qualifications for anyone that doesn't know. So it was a nice time where I sort of blended both, but it certainly doesn't give you stability making these films. You know, it's certainly more of a passion project, and I will continue doing them for sure if I can find the time. Ron has just agreed to do Cycling Whistle back to France. So he's doing Tokyo to France in 2022. It's going to take him 600 days. And he's going to cycle south from Tokyo down to Sydney, then across through the Pacific Islands, and then up through Patagonia, all the way through South America and across America, into Canada, across into Greenland, through the UK, and then into France.
600 days,
and I'm keen to, like, I don't think I'm going to film it all, definitely not, but I would like to be either on the bike with him for a good 3 weeks somewhere. Yeah. And if there's anyone out there that wants to join Ron, they're more than welcome to. It's very much an open invitation, this trip. But I would like to, I think you're a big cyclist. I mean, is that anything that you would like to do, if I can ask you a question?
I'm not sure I'd be able to handle being on the bike that long.
But have you done a bike tour before?
Of 2 days.
2 days.
Almaty to Bishkek, Central Asia, you see. So, and then here in Hong Kong, me and Mr. Day and two other guys from outside of school did the entire of Hong Kong. So that was
about
250 kilometres in a day. Basically, a perimeter of all three of the main sections, the island, New Territories, or Kowloon side, and then Lantau. And it took us probably we were 10 and a half hours moving. We were total time was maybe more like 14 hours.
That's impressive.
So that's about the only...
Yeah.
Because having not been a cyclist in the younger years, I'm not sure I've necessarily got the saddle endurance to handle it. Whereas I think a guy like Ron, by looking at him, looks like he's got that capacity.
Well, that's a surprising thing. He was a banker until he was 43.
Right.
He decided to bin it completely off.
And then go down a different line.
Completely change it. So, you know, there's time for all of us, you know.
And in terms of the film...
Yeah,
I obviously can. You can watch it via Amazon Prime, rent it. But how did then that work in terms of you made the film, produced it, was ready to go? Then, like, who picks up the phone and says, "Yeah, Mr. Rolston, I want to buy that, and I want to be able to show it on this channel or whatever."
So this is a massive learning experience for us. I went in this blind, you know, we put our own funding into this and we made a load of mistakes, obviously, but we made the film and you've got to sign up with a distributor. So someone that knows the industry, whatever. So we were lucky enough to sell the film to National Geographic, which is a big thing. You know, it's your first film. We filmed on GoPros, you know, and a couple of Canons and a Sony, you know, on the back of a motorbike, and we're able to sell a film to Nat Geo, which was a huge achievement. But financially, these things, there's only a small percentage of these films that actually make money. And I would say The Longest Haul hasn't yet made money, but that doesn't mean that it hasn't achieved beyond what we ever thought it would achieve. But yes, so what you would do is you would make a film, there's multiple different distributors, millions of distributors that sell content that's related to your content. So there might be a distributor that sells adventure films like ours. So we sign with them and they push that around to the markets around the world. So our film is bought by Cathay Pacific. So you may have seen it there for a 3-month period before all this lockdown and everything happened.
I see. Okay.
And so on. So, you know, there might be the Golf Channel might buy it, etc. And, you know, there could be areas of the world like Australia. There might be a ABC might buy it there and things like that. So you start snapping it into regional pieces.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what you do. And then I put it onto iTunes, Vimeo, Google Play, things like that. So you've got to, you basically register and you sell it to, you put it in their library.
Okay. And so obviously what you're trying to say is that obviously Nat Geo buying it, you've not obviously been in full-time employment for it. So it's obviously been enough to keep you going. So you're a multimillionaire courtesy of this film.
I've been in constant employment outside of this. This is certainly like a start. This is a total passion project. That money went into producing the film and the pieces that needed to be done are the music, the color, everything else. I'm working for free on this thing. I didn't get any money for making The Longest Haul, I can tell you that.
Okay, so then in terms of your current physical activity, so I know that you still are an active rugby player here in Hong Kong. Having spoken to you earlier, you're still trying to hit the golf ball as much as possible. Obviously, COVID has impacted on everybody's organised sport activity over the last 18 months or so. So is that still your two main things that you would say that you do in your current sporting focus in terms of outside of school?
Absolutely, yeah. Like, I'm still playing for Valley, still really enjoy playing at a high level. I still coach a lot with Valley Fort. If I can sniff around a golf anywhere in Hong Kong, I'll be there.
Guys. If anybody's got any contacts, Mr. Rolston's your man, good player, and got some stories to tell. There you go.
Absolutely.
I'm sure some of our pains have got the capacity to get on some of these good courses. So there you go. You'd be a more willing participant than me. I cannot join you guys, unfortunately, until maybe October time, then I'll be back to it. Right, so Mr. Olsen, I'm sure you've known this because I know you've listened to lots of our episodes before because it's a far-reaching podcast. We always finish with the same fast-fire round questions. Now, they're not actually that fast. If you want to elaborate on any of them, you're welcome to. But hopefully you didn't read these, so you had no preparation time at all on them. So, first up, favourite food?
Probably Thai food.
Any Thai food?
Yeah, and if we were to relate it back to the Mongolia thing, I think I thought of Thai food for 80 days.
Right.
We all know what the Central Asian food's like,
mm-hmm.
and it's a lot to be desired, I have to say.
But you were probably at that stage taking anything.
Anything, yeah.
You were walking 30k a day.
The smell of mutton actually...
Oh, that is, yeah, that's pretty much.
Actually made me hungry instead of feel sick.
Okay.
It did a real switcheroo, yeah.
Okay, that's
But positive. Thai food in general...
And also, Mr. Olsen actually eats the least amount in that PE office. I've just worked out as well. He's just a measly amount compared to the rest of us. Anyway, that was a side note. Interesting fact. Nothing to do with the fact you've got a world record. I've ruined that.
Interesting fact. I would say that's probably the most interesting fact I've got, I have to say. Yeah.
Favourite holiday destination?
When
you can get there.
Mongolia.
Oh, really? It holds that?
Absolutely.
Closer place to the heart, okay. Favourite gadget?
Probably like, let's see, like a yardage measuring device for golf. I know that's a bit odd.
That is like something my dad would say. That's how old you just sounded there.
Because I've used it for so like for 15 years. When you go out on the golf course and you don't have it,
you're lost.
Yeah.
Favorite book, if you're a reader.
Yeah, I've been recently reading a lot of like adventure style stuff.
Getting yourself some new ideas.
Yeah, there's a few good ones. I've started getting into the history of Central Asia, Kazakhstan, places like that. So those style books. I couldn't tell you specifically, but I would say adventure style stuff for sure.
You must have a couple of these. Most famous person met.
Well.
Oh.
Yeah. This
better
is,
get myself comfy.
I was lucky enough to be invited to the Laureus Sports Awards in Monaco. So, I met a lot of people like Brian O'Driscoll and Boris Becker and, you know, people like that.
And were you straight in to go and speak to them? You were you?
Yeah.
You didn't
Phil, it, yeah, lots of. Roger Federer was there and things like that. So, lucky enough in Hong Kong. I think Hong Kong is a very good place to find yourself, especially during the sevens and things like that. Mm. There's a lot of famous people floating around. I would say that would have been a fairly star-studded evening. You know, Lewis Hamilton and all the rest of them were all there. So you find yourself, a few gin and tonics deep at 12 a.m. mingling with those guys. So that was a really nice experience, I have to say. But I'd say that was a good one for celebrities.
If you were an animal, what one would you be?
I'd be some sort of reptile, I'd say.
Why?
Like a big sort of reptile fan.
Okay.
Like a lizard, some sort of lizard.
Oh, just because you're a fan of them?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Interesting. I expected some skewed answers here, so you've not let me down.
I would say people would maybe say that I look a bit rodent-y, maybe, or something. Yeah.
Oh, see if any of our new people agree. If you could get yourself anything at all in the world, what would it be?
I'm quite obsessed with the Suzuki Jimneys that are around.
Okay.
There's a little Jeeves. Actually, that's a complete... Obviously, that's not exact... That's not the one thing I want in my life.
That sounds like a perfect...
No, let's see. What would it... You mean anything?
Literally, the money is no object for this question.
It
doesn't even have to be a thing.
I don't know. Probably the... Being able to travel at the moment,
okay.
I'd say, would be quite good.
For a man
of
adventure travel, I'd imagine it's quite key.
Yeah, I'd say something like that.
Okay. And then last question, we always finish. Biggest life lesson you can share in under 60 seconds to our listeners?
Okay. I've told about one in terms of being patient and chipping away at big goals, taking one step at a time. I know it's a bit cliche, but... let's see. I would say take risks. Don't be afraid to fail. Think outside the box. Keep learning. Don't stop learning. Yeah, and maybe... Yeah, I would say something like that. I would say go out and... Especially when you're young, go out and do what you want to do, I would say. You'll never regret that.
I think one of the key ones that I took from the film was, what I think was maybe even in the trailer, you said it was one of you said, or maybe it was you, you said that obviously in this current world people struggle to live in the present, and I think that was a big part of your trip, was that was obviously, as you say, living for this goal that was probably unachievable at large points, but if you just lived in that one shot, 1 kilometre, very small scale things, and you were very much in that moment getting involved with local people, and I think that's probably quite a cool way of really hammering home. It's quite hard to do, I think, in Hong Kong at times to live. You're always busy, people are doing things, there's 8 things in your calendar you're running around, whereas I think a place like Central Asia really allows you, especially when you get out of the cities, allows you to kind of do that. So that was probably one thing.
I think you're right. I think it's the simplicity of what that gives you. You're just focusing on one thing and you're getting rid of all that clutter that is very satisfying.
Yeah, no, for sure, I agree. Okay, well, that rounds us up for today, Mr. Rawson. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm going to add the information about the feature film in the show notes. So for anybody who is interested in looking it up, they're welcome to. I would put a little disclaimer on this that there is some choice language if you are of a younger age. So mums and dads, maybe be aware of that. It's not often. It's never Mr. Ralston.
It's
his comrades. And obviously this was long before he was a teacher. So please bear that in mind. But yeah, just as a forewarning, I did watch it again. It's very, very good. And yeah, I'll put that information in the show notes. We are hopefully going to be back with at least one or two more episodes before the end of term. Can't make any promises given my own fitness issues and Mr. Reed's. But yeah, we've got a couple more guests lined up. So thanks again, Mr. Ralston, and have a good day.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Nattering with the Knights. If you want to make sure that you don't miss any future episodes, then please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please reach out to your PE teacher if you have any feedback or ideas about topics you would like to see and hear about in the future. In the meantime, have a great week, and we will see you next time.